Hello everyone. Today I want to talk about the relationship between capitalism and two interrelated phenomena, which are mass immigration and feminism, because they are both a subset, I think, of the same phenomenon. Chiefly, that capitalism, everywhere and always, is searching for the lowest labour costs it can find. Now, I am far from the first person to point this out. Of course, Marx was aware of this. Lenin, as I mentioned in a previous video, was aware of this. But before Marx and before Lenin, so too was Thomas Carlyle. And in this book here, you can see he talks about cash payment. Now, when he talks about cash payment, he's talking about the universal nexus of man to man, social bonds, social relationships being replaced with simply cash payment. Okay, now when I pointed this out on Twitter, in fact, it started with an exchange between V, Romanian V, who I was talking about last week, and my buddy Carl Benjamin, Sargon of Akkad. They had exchange on Twitter, and it just led me to intervene, where I quote tweeted Carl and said, "Weaknesses of capitalism include 1. Permanent incentives for mass immigration, 2. Permanent incentives for feminism, 3. The fact that it's a universalizing doctrine that can't distinguish between peoples." I may do a whole video on that forthcoming. And 4. Extreme tolerance of subversives. And in this video, I want to focus on the first two of those. Okay. Now, I'll come back to Carlyle in a moment, but this post upset a lot of libertarians who then spent the best part of 2 days attacking yours truly. And I just want to share some of the things that came up. One person was like, "Well, how does capitalism promote feminism?" And I said, "Well, capital seeks to drive down the cost of labour. Feminism equals double the labour pool, halve the cost of labour. Labour is weakened when the pool is increased. Capital always seeks to weaken labour by maxing out the pool. Would be good if more rightoids actually read Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell." Now, Thomas Sowell does not actually talk about feminism or the relationship between capitalism and feminism in that book. But what he does talk about is the law of supply and demand. When supply is increased of a good relative to demand, the price of that good goes down. And by increasing the labour pool, by adding women to it, as happened in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you then put a downward pressure on wages. And people can have a look at real wages, okay, here in the UK. It doesn't take a genius to figure out. Back in the 60s, a milkman or a postman could buy a 4-bedroom house with a wife and 2 or 3 kids and have enough money to live on, okay? In this day and age, you need a man and a woman, both of whom are working, both of whom are on good salary jobs, and still they can't afford that 4-bedroom house. Part of that is the housing market, which also has its supply and demand, but a big part of it is the suppression of wages that have occurred since feminism. And this was sold to the people, this was sold to women as quote-unquote liberation. Just think now, you're being sold, being chained to a desk, answering to a boss, to a corporate overlord, and that is being sold as quote-unquote liberation. Very good person on this topic, opened my eyes up to it back in the day, was Peter Hitchens. Peter Hitchens has got a good many bits on it in Cameron Delusion, Unconventional Wisdom, and even Abolition of Britain, where he talks about how feminism basically is a kind of capitalist ploy, all about actually expanding the labour market. The other part of this was, of course, about immigration. And I have to say, it's funny because I simply mentioned something that is just a basic rule of Econ 101. And libertarians really acted like the 2016 SJW when I pointed this out. I said, if supply of labour increases relative to demand for labour, cost of labour goes down. Therefore, buyers of labour seek to increase the supply of labour. And you wouldn't believe the amount of nonsense that people try to sell me to try to deny this basic fact. I can come back to Carlyle, because Carlyle, writing in the middle of the 19th century, could see all of this happening. He complained about 30,000 distressed needlewomen looking for work on the streets of London, many of whom had come over from Ireland. There was an immigration crisis in England in Carlyle's time of people coming from famine-struck Ireland looking for work. Carlyle called this phenomena nomadism, and it was one of the many consequences of replacing the old-fashioned feudal social bonds with the cash nexus, the cash payment. What did he say? In fact, very good is Marx and Engels on this exact topic, right? So Marx and Engels, reading Carlyle, drew out this lesson from Carlyle. They said, the bourgeoisie has put an end to all feudal, patriarchal, idyllic relations. It has pitilessly torn asunder the motley feudal ties that bound man to his natural superiors, and has left remaining no other nexus between man and man than naked self-interest and callous cash payment. Marx and Engels on Carlyle. And this analysis has basically remained true. Now, people have all sorts of things that they try to come back at this argument, and I will deal with each of the counter-arguments, okay? First, there is the argument that actually what is causing mass immigration today is welfare. Now, sure, welfare perverts incentives. Welfare doesn't help matters at all. But the truth of the matter is that most illegal migrants don't have any access to welfare whatsoever, apart from, you know, if they're put up in a hotel or something seeking asylum. But once they actually get in as an asylum seeker, there's all sorts of things that they're not given access to as a result of not being a British citizen. You can argue that they get access to NHS and school places and things like that, which is kind of a welfare in kind, right? But the actual thing that has driven these people here is not welfare. It is the same thing that has driven mass immigration since the time of Carlyle, since the mass migrations to America in the 19th century. And I got a post. I said, it's a libertarian cope that immigration is caused by welfare. It's just not true. 19th century mass immigration was not caused by welfare. Okay? It was the primary driver is always the labour market. And it is always capital, by which I mean the owners, business owners, employers seeking lower wages. Now, if you don't think this is true, I actually have some stats that may shock you. Last year in Britain, in 2024 and 2025, there was a number of raids by Keir Starmer's government on all sorts of businesses, okay? Bangladeshi restaurants, Indian restaurants, Deliveroo. And what did they find? They found undocumented migrant workers, illegal migrants, working in restaurants on £50 a week when the minimum wage is £11.44 an hour. So you can see Clearly, those people were being paid less than the legal required minimum wage. Deliveroo drivers were found to be working as many as 115 hours per week and getting less than £1,500 a month, which calculates at, in some cases, as low as £3 an hour. A lot of Deliveroo workers were working for between £3 and £5. They also found farms, big farms, farms that supply supermarkets, where you buy your carrots and sausages and so on. Those farms were found to be employing people at below minimum wages, as were care homes. Okay? Now, the argument given by a lot of people, there's a whole industry of rent-a-gobs telling you, well, the reason they have to do this is because British people are lazy. British people don't want to do these jobs. British people don't want to, you know, they won't get out of bed, etc. It's literally illegal. It is not legal to pay a British person less than that. And now libertarians will come back and they say, well, it's because of the minimum wage. It's because of it's not. Okay, the fact is that there's a basic threshold for how you can survive in this country. That's why they brought in minimum wage laws. If your company, if you're Deliveroo, if you're a Bangladeshi restaurant, and you cannot beat the market paying your staff minimum wage, then simply you don't deserve to be in operation. Your business is actually not viable. Right, if in order to make margin you need to break the law, i.e. paying people less than the legal minimum, you don't deserve to be in business and the government should shut you down. That's actually the correct position to take when it comes to that. Okay. There are other things, though, that people brought up. They said, well, the thing is, AA, this is not real capitalism. Tesco's and Sainsbury's isn't real capitalism. Because I pointed out that, because what happened basically is that somebody, you know, in my comments, they were arguing against my premise that because employers benefit from a larger labour pool, that they try to make a larger labour pool, okay? And this guy said, because cheaper apples attract more buyers, stores try to make apples infinitely abundant. Thought this was a gotcha. And I simply said, modern supermarkets put huge, and I mean huge, downwards pressure on farms using monopoly contracts, many of which are very unfair, by the way, to make the margins razor thin. Every libertarian attempt at a gotcha reveals how little of the real economy they understand. And because I said this, they then came back and said, ha, using modern, that's not real capitalism. This is the state at play. This is actually socialism. I find that a very irritating thing. Because on the one hand, they come out and say that. And on the other hand, when people say, okay, well, that's surely proof then that Walmart, which uses basically a centrally planned system at the moment. And if you're saying it's part of the state, if you're saying it's not real capitalism, then surely Walmart has evidence that, you know, planning works. But they don't take that either. Cato Institute says, no, Walmart is not evidence that centrally planned economies work. Actually, Walmart is capitalism working, which is always the move they make. And somebody actually did make this point. Somebody said supermarkets are capitalism working. Absolutely, they are. And I said, yes, to come back to Carlyle, the destruction of all higher values, towns, communities, nationhood, any sense of higher purpose or meaning in life at all, social bonds, just so you can have an apple for 50 pence rather than 70 pence. That's the logic of the market. You want an apple for 50p, not 70p. So all the other costs have to be driven down as well. And one of the biggest costs is labour. So the supermarket will see to it that the farm is what they call a marginal or even supra-marginal firm, on the brink of going out of business if they don't hit those razor thin margins. And that downwards pressure creates a pressure in the farm to do things like breaking the law by employing illegal migrants, semi-legal migrants in some cases, at lower than the minimum wage. And a lot of people have told me that even if your Brit tries to get a job in one of those farms, they'll be turned away. Those farms use agencies. Those agencies have a, you know, they've got a pool of foreigners who they only employ. Why? Probably because they're breaking the law. Probably because they're breaking the law. And what is actually driving all of that is the logic of the, it's the mathematical logic of the market, which is always driving towards the cheap and nasty, as Carlyle calls it. Lower input costs. Where can we save a bit of money? Where can we squeeze out a little bit more margin? If your aim is to get a 20p cheaper apple and you run society, you rearrange all of society just around that fact, yes, this makes sense. But if you care about anything else, then you need actually to come to the conclusion that certain things need to have constants, controls. You actually need to use government force to stop some of these things happening. In this case, by banning businesses who break the law by using illegal migrant labour, who try to undercut the costs of everybody else in the market. And rightly so, Keir Starmer's government is cracking down on those firms who are doing that. But if you're on the side of capitalism, you need to actually admit, as all of the actually honest libertarians in the past, Mises and Rothbard and Milton Friedman and von Baerbock, all of them admitted that this is the ruthless, Hayek as well, they all admitted that this is the ruthless logic of the market, that left to its own devices, the market would, capital would go to where labour is cheapest. And they see this as good. They actually had the guts to say, actually, we're for open borders. Milton Friedman argued for open borders. You can get up Free to Choose from 1980 and see Milton Friedman arguing against union bosses, saying, actually, we need to expand the labour market. Why should you get monopoly controls and special rights? Really, you're screwing, you, the union guy, is screwing the consumer. That's what Milton Friedman said in 1980. Yeah, there's a couple of little tricks about, oh yeah, but wealth, you can't work with welfare and all of that. But that's a side issue. That's not dealing with the actual logic of what the market does. Because the market, left to its own devices, will always gravitate towards a vast, immense international system that seeks out the highest margins for the lowest costs. Again, another person who talked about this was Brooks Adams, who actually predicted correctly that China would dominate industry in the future in 1895. 50 years before Mao, and 70, 80 years before Deng, and 100 years before what actually happened, Brooks Adams said, because capital will always seek out low labour costs, the future will tend towards China and Asia dominating. That is exactly what happened. Because it is the logic of the thing. And unless you say, no, we're going to put government controls in the way, we're going to use force to stop this natural course of things taking root. We're going to protect our workers. We're going to protect British people. We're going to protect our borders using force. Unless you do that, capitalism will always tend towards what we have seen, mass immigration, and it will also have as a secondary effect, because it doesn't like traditional family relations between men and women, it will also break down the family unit. it will also promote feminism. It will try to get women, it will try to get the best, the most fertile years of women and stick them in the office. And then when they're in the office, they can't have kids. And when they can't have kids, the birth rate goes down. And when they can't, and when the birth rate goes down, the population then starts decreasing. The government panics and they say, oh, the population is decreasing. Where are we going to get people? Oh, I know, mass immigration. So you see how all of these three things, capitalism, feminism, and mass immigration, are interconnected. It upsets me that there are still people who won't admit this. In the past, laissez-faire types, free marketeers, were honest enough to admit it. Now, partly as a result of IQ decline in the libertarian space, but also as a matter of the fact that immigration is very politically unpopular at the moment, they try to hide this fact, or they try to cope. They try to say, well, actually, it's not in the nature of it, or they try to play these word games, and I'm not having it. And I think this is important, though, because still, at the moment, all of the rightist parties are still absolutely rampacked of free market dogma, libertarianism, Margaret Thatcher, and all the rest of it. And especially the boomers, the older people, they're going to have to get with the program that where we're headed, where things are, we cannot be ideologically committed to the market, because we've seen what the market does. We need to use government controls to get a handle on some of these problems. And we need to use government controls to put a ring fence around those things that we deem sacred, those things that we deem untouchable by the ravages of the market. Otherwise, it's the cheap and nasty and nomadism for everybody in all areas. Those things that you care about are the things that the government says, nope, you can't touch this. This is sacred to us. This is what distinguishes us from every other place. And unless you protect it using the government, it's going to get wrecked. The market will, through the process of creative destruction, tear away, break apart, basically like an acid, corrode and destroy every last thing that you hold dear. Even companies that you hold dear, even brands that you love, will be gobbled up through mergers and acquisitions and bullshit merchants saddling the company with debt, right? So even businesses that are loved will actually, in the long run, be destroyed by this process in the market. So people keep on asking me, why aren't you a libertarian, eh? Well, these are all the reasons why. And I don't think anything I've said actually contradicts anything said by Austrian theory. Remember, I wrote a whole book called Defenders of Liberty with chapters on the Austrian school, on the Chicago school, on the Manchester school, on the physiocrats. I know this history. John Locke and Thomas Hobbes. And I know the history and the theory and the ideas of liberalism and of laissez-faire free markets better than any of you. How do I know that? Because I'm arguing with you, and you can't tell me what Bomberverk said about subsistence wages, as an example. Because you haven't read the stuff. You don't know it. Bomberverk was trying to argue against Marx that labour is not exploitative. Okay, well, we can accept that argument. But then he was led to conclude that, well, if people are desperate, if they don't have any other money, if they're hungry, if they're poor, if they have no other options, then actually the employer, the capitalist, can bid down their wages to below subsistence level. Bomberverk says that. What's his answer? Well, it's hard cheese. That's just the market. That's them's the breaks. Them's the breaks. Okay? That was the attitude of free marketeers in that age. Is it any wonder that the unions got together, that the governments got together, that the people said, actually, we're not going to fucking... No, we're going to get together and we're going to put in some protection so you can't diddle us over as badly as that. That's where you get your minimum wage from. That's where you get rights in the workplace and safety laws from is from people saying, oh, we're not going to put up with this. You know, you basically have us over a barrel here, so we're going to collect the vise and push back a little bit. Of course, all of that was crushed by the system, by Thatcher later on. If you're interested, how did I become from being a libertarian to my views now, other than reading Elite Theory and people like James Burnham, right, Machiavellians? It wasn't only that. It was also coming to realize some of the truths of the actual mechanisms of the market. One person I read was John Gray, his book False Dawn. Fascinating book, which I recommend people read to actually see that a lot of this stuff, a lot of this ideological laissez-faire masks actual mechanisms of power that are taking place, centralizations in the case of False Dawn. Another thing I came to realize is that laissez-faire, in a way, is the natural ruling capacity, the natural ruling ideology of empire. So when the British Empire was at its zenith, it adopted laissez-faire. And then when the American Empire was at its zenith, it adopted laissez-faire. At other times, they switched to protectionism. And there's always, they can always find intellectuals to justify what they want to do at the time. For us right now, we have seen the consequences of actually tried liberalism, of actually lived capitalism. And look at where we are. All those things that Carlyle predicted have come to pass. All those things that Brooke Adams talked about with China taking over have come to pass. How were they able to predict that? By following the logic of the market. All right, I'll leave it there. This should be interesting. I'm probably going to have pushback from libertarians, but why not? I'm in the mood at the moment, guys, to fight on every front. So come at me. I'm like the what's his name in the Matrix, Lawrence Fishburne. Come on, come at me. Ever seen that film Ip Man? He fights like 20 people at once. Go on, I can fight you all at once. All right, pick up a course at the Academic Agency, and I'll see you later on when we're going to be talking about the prospect of civil conflict on office hours. I'll see you all then. Catch you next time. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.